Thank you for tuning in to the Kingdom Over Castle podcast, where we seek to unite God's people in Northern Nevada in order to see lives changed and lives saved. We have a great opportunity right now to make a difference in our communities, but it's going to take all of us. It's important that every Jesus follower is fully committed to a local church body while also celebrating and supporting fellow evangelical church bodies in the area. In the Kingdom Over Castle podcast, we celebrate what God is doing in our area and seek to inform God's people of opportunities to make a difference for Christ here and now in Northern Nevada.
We are your church. We pray revive this earth. Build your
As we begin today's podcast, I want to ask you a question. If the church, and by the church I mean capital C church, all of the evangelical churches that believe Jesus died on the cross, rose from the dead, and we were saved by faith in him, if all of those churches ceased to exist, would our community notice? Would it make a difference in our community if we ceased to exist? Now let me get a little bit more personal. If you left the community, move away for a job, whatever it is, if you were no longer here, would there be a hole left behind because the impact you have in our community for God's kingdom? Again, that's a personal question, but it's one that we should ask because the scripture is very clear that we as Jesus followers, we're not saved just to exist as saved people. We're saved to make a difference in this world for God's kingdom. And the Epistle of James, James, the half-brother of Jesus, is writing primarily to people, it looks like, who are saved or think they're saved by faith, but there's not a lot of evidence in their lives. And so he's challenging, and at one point he says, faith without works is dead. And we can debate the exact meaning of that verse and come to different conclusions, and that's okay. But if faith without works is dead, it either means that faith, if there's no works, there's no evidence of it, it's dead, meaning it doesn't exist at all. That person thinks they're saved, but they're not. Or it's a dead faith, meaning a useless faith. This person is saved by faith, and we know this is absolutely possible for somebody to be saved and then have no real impact for the kingdom in their lives. And so this is a person useless to the kingdom, although they believe in Jesus. And James, in his letter, gives us one really great application. Of course, there's many others. But in one verse, he says that true religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, that we visit orphans and widows in their distress. Well, in today's podcast, you are going to hear an interview with Lori Nichols from the Division of Child and Family Services, and we're going to be talking about foster care. There is a great need right now for foster families and for people who might not be a fit to be a foster family, and that's okay, to serve the foster system. When a child is removed from the home for their safety, for whatever reason, it is a traumatic event. It is very difficult. And I believe that an application of James, his verse saying true religion is to visit orphans and widows in their distress, is this right here. Are these orphans, not technically, but they're kids in need and their families in need. And so we can be homes. We can provide a place for these kids to go. Right now, there's such a need, you're going to hear in this podcast, for families that sometimes these kids end up in a hotel room for a while or even just in an office somewhere, not a place where they're comfortable or loved. And the goal, as you're going to hear in this podcast, is for families to be reunified. And so we have an opportunity to serve these kids in an interim period where they're removed from the home, hopefully with them to come back to their home. And for some of us, we will have the opportunity to serve the families as well, the parents, in order to get healthy, in order that these families can come back together and hopefully be great parents, not just good parents, but great parents. And so, church in Northern Nevada, we have an opportunity. There's a great need. And I believe that if we show up, again, capital C church, this is not one church or one denomination. If we show up in this area, we will change the landscape of foster care, and it will make a great, great impact on individual lives and families. So listen to this podcast with an open heart, considering how might God want you to be involved, because we are here not just for ourselves, but we're here for others. And there's a need for foster parents and other needs, and you will find most of those needs in the show notes. But again, listen to this podcast with an open heart. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I am here with Lori with DCFS, which stands for the Department of Child and Family Services. Lori, tell us, what is your role within DCFS?
So I am a social worker. I started out at DCFS as CPS in the late 90s, and then I worked for about a year and a half, 2 years in that role. Went home to start a family, stayed home for about 11 years, and then needed to go back to work in 2009 when everything kind of fell apart economically in our community. Went back to work in 2011 and did recruitment for, 11 years, and then moved into the supervisor position. So now I supervise the licensing unit over all the 15 rural counties in the state.
Okay, so that is not Reno, not Vegas. Where is that?
So all 15 rural counties. So the way it works is the counties that have the largest populations, it has to be like over 100,000, they have their own agencies that handle CPS, adoptions, you know, permanency, all of that, recruitment, licensing. And so I basically cover the rest of the counties outside of Clark and Washoe counties.
That's a lot of driving.
It really is. It really is. I've seen all parts of rural Nevada, and yeah. I love this state. It's a great state to live in.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So we're talking mainly about foster care. I mean, we're talking about the foster system. These are kids that, for whatever reason, are being removed from their homes. What is the goal with the foster system? Mm-hmm. Kids being removed, obviously, for their protection, and I know it actually takes a lot for a kid to be removed.
Yeah.
What is the goal of the system?
So the goal of the system is really to be as uninvolved as possible, really. And I think a lot of people think that DCFS, I mean, there may be a negative connotation to that, or want to go in and like take children away from their parents. That's the last thing we want. I've done CPS. I've done, you know, different roles in the state as a social worker, and there's never been a time where I've ever heard in that office that, you know, we're excited to remove kids. We're never excited. So ultimately the goal is to make sure that children are safe, to investigate allegations of abuse or neglect. If there's enough there to have to investigate, and we see that there is abuse or neglect occurring, the first thing we're going to do is look at a family member or maybe a safety plan with a family member so that they don't have to come into legal custody. Or we have to take them into legal custody in place with a relative or maybe a neighbor or somebody that's that knows the family, that's safe. And then the parent would be, you know, open to doing that. So that would be the next level. And then if we don't have a family member, we don't have a neighbor or somebody, you know, that knows the family well, then we have to put them in a general foster care home. And so ultimately the goal out of that is to get support and services into the family so that we can get their kids home.
Yeah.
Because kids need to be home. If their parents can provide a safe environment, even if it's minimum standards, really, they need to be home with their family.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that. And that's what I'm hoping our listeners, you know, those of you listening, I'm hoping you're going to get an idea of the need for foster homes, for foster families to support DCFS, but that the goal is, like Lori just stated, reunification.
Right.
Which is a lot of work for a foster home, for the system. Mm-hmm. But as we were just talking before we started this, blood is thicker than water.
Oh, yeah.
And oftentimes it's going to be best if those kids can be reunified. And so that's the goal.
Right. I mean, if you listeners think about your own children and, you know, if somebody told you that you were unable to care for them and took them away from you, how would that make you feel? I mean, and none of us are perfect parents, that's for sure. And so, but if somebody said to you that, you know, you're not providing a safe environment, then, you know, you would tend probably to be a little defensive about that. And, you know, I think CPS and when removals occur, it's a lot of shame and doubt and pain. And there's so much there that's generational that these birth parents were kind of born into that it's... You know, we hope that our foster families will be open, if it's appropriate, to walk with those families.
Yes. So I want to ask you some questions about what's happening so that our listeners could hear, because I know for me, my wife and I learned about the need for foster families just a year and a half ago or so, and we didn't realize it was such a big need.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that those listening will hear there's a big need, and there's not just one way to serve, but there's several ways to enter in. And I guess I have a dream. What if our community heard this need and stepped up?
Right.
My goodness, how great would that be? Not just for the kids, but for the families.
Right.
So give us some of the statistics around kids going into foster homes and the availability of foster homes in rural Nevada.
Okay, so at any given time, there's probably between 350 and 400 kids in foster care in rural Nevada. And that's a pretty standard number. Because kids get reunified, and then kids sometimes get taken back into custody, and all those 15 counties have their, not each county, but there are areas that have their own offices. So we have an office in Fallon, we have an office in, Fernley and Yerington. Those are field offices. They're smaller offices, but also in Pahrump and Carson, of course, but each of those areas has children that they're reunifying and coming into custody at all times. So it's hard to say for sure what that number is. I could say probably over the last 2 or 3 years with COVID and everything that's come in, we've lost half of the foster homes that we used to have.
Okay.
And there was a time when I was in recruitment that we probably had close to 200 foster homes across rural Nevada. Now we, like, I think our biggest number yet, because we have to do quarterly numbers, was like 80 foster homes now.
Okay.
So, and that's including, so that's not general, just general foster care, that's relative caregivers as well.
That includes if you find a neighbor or a sister or uncle.
Yes.
That includes them.
That, wow. And so if you think about the fact, I mean, yeah, we are losing homes, and the homes that have done it for a long time and have hung in there, they're getting burned out. They're tired, you know, because we've had to use them so much, they don't get a break. And so now they're kind of like, we're done. We've done our time, and, you know, we're ready to move on to do other things.
Yeah. So one of the greatest needs is clearly foster homes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we need homes of all different makes and models, really. Different culture, ethnicity. We need homes that just have their own skill set, their own strengths, because every household, every home and family is different. You know, they're going to have their own uniqueness about them. And so when we talk about how many foster homes do you need, you know, it's hard for us to make that a number, right? Because it's not about quantity, it's about quality, and it's about keeping kids in their communities with their siblings and making sure that these foster homes are going to provide excellent care, not good care, excellent care to these kids.
Yeah, I was trying to nail Lori down before we started recording on, okay, if we were going to fix it, how many homes would it be? And I learned, and I thought this is pretty neat, and a great goal is it's not a number of homes, but it's in every community, so that when a child's removed, hopefully they can stay in the same community, go to the same school, have access to the same things that they had to disrupt their life as little as possible.
Right.
Which means that there's going to be homes, if we fulfill these goals, that are empty and waiting for somebody from that community. I mean, that would be amazing, but we're talking a lot. So you can't put a number on it.
No. No.
We need a lot of homes.
Yeah, and there are folks out there that, you know, think that fostering might be a good fit for them, and it's not. It's really not. And and that's part of that process, is we have to kind of go through and figure those things out, and that takes time. But, you know, there's a certain cookie cutter type of foster home that we're looking for, and they're a little rough around the edges. They're willing to advocate for their foster children. They incorporate those kids into everything they do, and, you know, everything about their family, those kids are right there with them. But yeah, it's finding those kinds of homes that are going to stand up for these kids and put up with us.
Sure.
Yeah. That's a big deal too.
Yeah. Well, there's a system, it's legal, there's stuff involved, and it takes patience and understanding and grace.
Right.
Absolutely. So So I want us to speak to those listening now that might be thinking, okay, this might be something we need to get into. Okay, there's a great need. There's kids out there hurting that need a home, somebody to love them, even if it's just for a little while, which won't be easy. So let's think about, you know, as they're going to go home and couples or individuals are going to wrestle with this idea, what are some of those that there's certain traits about them, and you already touched on it a little bit, that they'll succeed?
Sure. People that are flexible, people that don't have an expectation of what this is going to look like. A lot of times people do come into the process where they kind of feel like, oh, you know, a child is going to be so happy to be taken out of this environment and placed with me, and I'm going to love this child with, you know, just all the wonderful things this child deserves. And that's wonderful. That's a wonderful thought and a mindset. But it's actually quite the opposite, that these kids didn't ask to be placed in your home. They don't want to be in your home for the most part.
They're not going to look at you as a hero, probably.
No. And so it's being with those kids in their point, in the worst possible moment in their life. I mean, ultimately, if you think about, again, your listeners think about, if their children were taken away from them and placed with a total stranger, that would probably be something that would be a pivotal moment in their life. So we need families that are going to understand what trauma is and how it affects the human brain, how it affects children's behavior. We need people that are not going to, you know, be offended when a kid screams out obscenities and "I hate you." And I'm not saying every child is going to do that. Some kids will be so over affectionate. There's all different ranges of, you know, different attachment disorders and things like that kids come into care with. So, you know, there's no, you know, one type of, you can see that child a mile away that they're in foster care. It's not like that. You would, some of your kids' friends that come over to your house may be in foster care and you wouldn't even know it. So it's families that are going to roll with it.
Yeah.
They're just going to roll with it. Yep, adaptable, for sure.
What homes have you seen there's traits where they shouldn't have even entered?
Families that want to build their family through adoption is probably not a good fit for our program.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because, yes, adoptive families are wonderful and amazing, and we have licensed adoptive families in the past, but what we're finding is that families that are adopt-only, they don't have the experience working with these kids and knowing what their behaviors are and how they act and how they process things. And so what we saw were families that were adopting only and they had never fostered before. And then the adoptions would disrupt because the families weren't like, why aren't they? I mean, we had an adoption disrupt because a family was upset that the child wasn't returning affection to them.
Wow.
That's like, I don't know what to say to that. I mean, it's like, it seems like, you know, just really common sense, you know, but people have an agenda. And I think a lot of times those folks, you know, we've had families that started out as adopt only and, you know, we've been very clear, this is not the right program for you because we are wanting to build somebody else's family back together,
right?
As opposed to building your family with this child, where these kids are in no position to fill a need for anybody,
right?
Period.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
These kids are in no position, and so people that are really looking for some kind of expectation to fill in themselves to build a family, and those are all wonderful things. It's just, you can see how that would probably fall apart when someone's saying, oh, okay, I'll foster for a while, then I'll adopt. Well, some people may foster for years and there's never going to be an opportunity to adopt.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that sticks out to me. Somebody moving into the system to fill a need in themselves, that's a problem.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Right. And okay. Yeah, so yeah, these kids are definitely in a position where they can't return affection. They can't return any, I mean, they're not going to meet a need for you.
Again, speaking to that family thinking, hey, maybe us, what is the process to become a foster parent? foster family?
So part of the challenge that we have is we are spread across the 15 rural counties. And so one of the wonderful things that we've had happen, we actually got funding to have a website done. And that website is www.ruralnvfostercare.com. And so all people have to do to start the process is go to that website, ruralnvfostercare.com. And on every page, there's a lot of information. There's videos of wonderful people that are foster parents that kind of give you, you know, some insight into, you know, why they became foster parents and, you know, their walk. But at the end of every page, there's a Get Started button. And so now, which is such a blessing, we have a program, a software program called Binti. And that took years. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing happens in the state quickly, but it took years, and we finally got the funding for it. And so now, instead of sending a packet, like with you, we had to send paperwork to you. And that guess who put that paperwork together? Me.
Yeah.
And so everything bottlenecks at me. And so because we do, I'm the supervisor, and then we have three workers. Right now, we're not even fully staffed. Because we had one worker just move on to a different position in Pahrump. And so we're all kind of, we're not only are we licensing general foster care providers, we're licensing relatives, we're licensing fictive kin, like the neighbor next door that took a child in. They've already got children, so we have to make them the priority because they're not getting paid or they're not getting a reimbursement until they get licensed. So there's that's why we're going to focus on them first. We're also licensing what's called an ICPC, where we have requests coming in from other states that are coming into our state to say, you have a relative that we want licensed for one of our kids. And so all of those things, I mean, right now, just to give you an idea, I probably have 8 ICPCs that are waiting to be assigned. Okay. And we just finished a training, which is awesome. But I've got people that are going to be completing that paperwork through Binti. And so you can see that it's like it all kind of, it's like congestion right at that, like with three workers across the 15
so
counties.
So the process is slow.
Yes, I guess that was my point.
Yes, it is slow. And I think that's important for people just to wrap their brain around.
Right.
It's a process.
Right.
Begin with, look at the stuff on the website, fill out the application and get it started.
Yes.
Expecting it to take a year.
I would say, I mean, I've tried to make it, I've tried to say, oh, you know, we maybe 6 months to a year, but if I'm being completely honest, the way it is right now, I would say at least up to a year.
Yeah. And if people can enter it with the right expectation.
Right.
I mean, that's going to go so much better for everybody.
Right.
You know, again, like I think you mentioned or we were talking about before, if these foster parents can be on the same team with DCFS.
Sure.
Not working against each other, but we're together.
Right.
Support. I mean, the same team.
Right.
The same goal.
It makes life so much easier. And it's so in order to get licensed, they go through the process. They get their, they can complete their documentation on Binti. They do an online training with us where that's a really amazing thing. That was kind of one of the good things that happened out of COVID is that we couldn't have this in, you know, because my supervisor, Kevin, and I would travel around rural Nevada, and that's a lot of time away from our families. We both have families, and it's like, and we're having to do these trainings 3 days straight, 9 hours a day.
Yep.
And so now we can have people not have to find childcare. You know, because we see kids, we see animals in the background.
Online.
Right.
On Zoom?
It's online. It's on Teams, actually.
Teams.
And and so, so people can be at home. They can be eating. They can be playing with the kids. I mean, we get to know people because they're in their home environment.
Yes.
And it's all live. So
They can be on it and not even be wearing pants.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. So, and it just makes it so much easier. I think this last training, I think we had 33 people sign up. A lot of people ended up not going through it, which is fine because people will figure out if, you know, this is something they really want to do or not. But I think out of that 33, we've got about 15 to 17 families that are finishing the homework through the training and, you know, they're potentially viable families.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
Well, and I think you would probably agree. I've encouraged those thinking about it to fill out the application and get started.
Right.
You can stop it at any time.
Oh, yeah.
But go in,
right?
And things will come up, and you go, oh, this isn't for us, or possibly the opposite.
Right.
Oh my goodness. You'll see some of the things about the needs and, and your heart might start gushing even more. Right.
Yeah. And a lot of times I've heard stories about how people became, cause I'm always interested to, how did you learn to, you wanted to be a foster parent? I mean, what crazy person told you wanted to be a foster parent? And it's like this, I saw a sign, or it was just like this weird thing. And then like, there were multiple other things that pushed you in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, that I think is the spirit, but you're pushing in that direction for, you know, that it just keeps coming up.
Sure.
Somebody talked to me about it. And then I saw an ad on TV, or I heard a radio ad, and you know, it's just the weirdest thing, but I think I'm supposed to be here. And
I love, and that's why I would encourage, start the process. Even if you think, I mean, because your heart might open.
You might.
Something might happen in you and you realize, and then you could be amazing. As we wrap up, I think we've covered some good details. Can you give us a success story or two? I mean, we hear a lot, and I know foster kids, there's a stigma around them, which is frustrating, and it's not their fault and shouldn't be. Right. And for foster parents, there is struggle and work and pain and all that.
Right.
But give us a success story where you've seen just things work out well.
So we had one situation with a family. This was a while back, and the family, there were issues like drug and alcoholism in the family, and a lot of times those are generational. So families will deal with these issues for years and years and years. I mean, even when I was in CPS in the late 90s, when I came back, some of these same family names were coming up that I remembered from when I did CPS. And so it's important to remember that too when we're talking about bio parents or natural parents. You know, they've got their own demons that they're dealing with. And to be able to walk alongside them and see them reunify, what a cool thing. It is like the coolest thing ever. But I think this family had dealt with that kind of issue, those substance use issues, and they ended up reunifying. I think the kids were out of the home for about a year.
Wow.
Which is pretty typical.
Oh, okay.
It's typical. They were able to reunify right around Christmas time. And so we all pulled together and were able to kind of bring in different, the director's office donated, all of us kind of pulled together. And we gave this whole family, we basically, you know, because they were moving into an apartment. I mean, there was so much going on in this moment, and made sure their Christmas was taken care of, made sure they had a furniture for the apartment. I mean, everybody just, it just kind of all came together, and it was a beautiful thing. Those are the things, you know, we have had panel events and had birth parents there that talk about if DCFS hadn't gotten involved, I don't know where I would be. I'd probably be dead. And I'm not saying DCFS, you know, is like, oh, they're, we're like the cure all, right? Cause a lot of people have very, very various views and thoughts about DCFS, but when we are able to do what we've set out to do and reunify families, and for a foster parent to see that, I mean, it's bittersweet, but what a wonderful thing. You know, we are reunifying children to their families. And so, yeah, there's so many different stories of you know, families reunifying and being, just get to start over.
Well, and giving those parents, it sounds like some of these, and I've heard some of those stories too, parents an opportunity to get over their issues.
Right.
To get help, to go to AA, whatever it is, to work through that stuff.
Right.
And then become the parent that the child needs them to
that's
be.
That's right.
Yeah.
That they were meant to be.
Right.
Really, before all this other chafe and all this other stuff in their life came up. And they finally have the opportunity to take time to be able to work on themselves. And, you know, it doesn't always work out like that.
Yeah.
But it when it does, it was worth every second of all the heartbreak, all the work, all the tears, you know, the all of it.
And what if there were enough homes where those kids could go to that somewhere else for a year and thrive and go back, staying in the same community?
Right.
I mean, how neat would that be? And how much easier would your job be, maybe in others, if there were enough homes?
Right.
Then energy could be put toward helping.
Right.
The families, rather than just
Right.
I heard you say staying in a hotel room with kids at times.
Right. We have so little homes. We have so little homes. And again, this used to be like the biggest fear when I did CPS. It is happening all the time because we don't have enough foster homes to take our kids. And so, you know, we've had employees become foster parents because at this point we're like, we don't have a place for these kids, or social workers or case managers are sleeping in an office.
Yep.
And that's no environment for a child. I mean, can you imagine how terrified your children would be if they had to sleep with a stranger in an office building? I mean, it would be terrible.
Yep.
So those are the kinds of things it's just the worst case scenario. It's like, it doesn't get any worse than that. So we are at a point in time where it's got to get better. It has to get better.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's an opportunity right now, and I'm hoping thousands will listen to this podcast and at least dozens.
Please. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what an opportunity. And all I can say is our experience is looking at the little faces and their eyes. You know, when you hold a hand, it becomes real. You know, the idea of it is one thing. When that kid sits on your lap.
Oh yeah.
It's something different.
Oh, absolutely. It is. Whenever we hear kids' voices in the office or down the hallway, man, everybody's like,
it's real.
Everybody buzzes right down to where that child is. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you know, we're pulling stuffed animals out, or we're getting stuff, because we know everything that child went through to have to be in that office. No kid wants to be in the DCFS office, but it's like, you know, that's what we're working for is to get these kids home. And we need families that are going to be supportive of that. They may not like it, but they're going to be supportive of it.
Yep.
We have to have that support.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and we started out, we live in a wonderful place and there's a lot of great people.
Yeah.
And I think the more they know about this issue,
the more
people will step up.
Right.
Because we do live in a great area.
Yeah.
Full of great people.
Yep. Yeah. I agree.
Well, thank you, Lori.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope that if you guys are listening, you want to take your next step, which would be visiting www.ruralnvfostercare.com, or you can go to the show notes, and there's a link, and you can click on that.
Awesome.
But check it out. Begin the process. Also, you can go to our contact form on the website, and we can help you get in touch with Lori. If you're struggling or you have questions, you can go there. So www.ruralnvfostercare.com.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you for listening to the Kingdom Over Castle podcast. If your church is not represented on the website, we want to know about it. Please go to our contact form at our website, which is kingdomovercastlenv.com. Fill out the contact form, and we want to know about your church. We want to include you on the website so that people can find out about you. If you know of a serve opportunity in our area where believers can get behind whatever it is, please go to our website. Let us know about that. If your church wants to be included, and we hope you do, in our ongoing tracking of salvations in our area, please, again, go to our website at kingdomovercastlenv.com, fill out the contact form, and we will create an ongoing communication with you, with your church, so that we can know what God is doing. Serve opportunities, celebrations of salvations and baptisms, and all of that can be included on the website as well as on the podcast. So thank you for listening, and we want to know what God is doing. Thank you very much. Church, we pray, revive this earth.